And up first, John Stroud from the Post-Independent joins me by phone. Thanks so much for calling in. John, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Great to talk to you today.
Yeah, thank you so much. As many of listeners know, John Stroud has been a reporter and editor in our area for a long time. The past couple weeks, he's covered cancellations of commencements and prep sports, closings of hotels and recreation areas, but he's also covered solutions like senior shopping hours at grocery stores and churches going virtual. There have been so many stories to tell. How are you and your family holding up right now, John?
Oh, we're doing pretty well. It's just me and my wife. She actually has to go into the office because she's in the financial biz, and you know, they have secure computer systems and stuff that they need to keep in the office. But so I'm pretty much here by myself, just me and the cat.
Oh, so no foreign exchange students or anything else right now?
Not right now. Although we do have an exchange student with another host family who's kind of stuck here right now.
I believe it. Well, let's dive into some of the coverage you've published in the Post-Independent since COVID-19 first arrived in our area. You interviewed the first Garfield County resident to test positive for the virus. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so we got the press release, I believe it was on a Saturday, from County Health Department that Garfield County had its first confirmed case. And as soon as we posted the story, there was a reader comment that explaining that the person had really been kind of run through the ringer before she finally got tested to find out if she indeed had COVID-19. And so I reached out and said, well, would she be willing to tell her story? And we had a couple of exchanges on Facebook Messenger, and put me in contact, and I got that interview that evening and told her story.
And in terms of what has transpired since, I mean, this was pretty early on in this whole news cycle. Have you spoken to the woman since your story came out back on March 14th?
Yes, I have had a couple of text exchanges with her just to see how she's doing, and she says she is recovered now, still working from home. She does have her kids back with her, so doing well, but I have been staying in touch with her, yes.
And a friend of hers who also had symptoms hadn't been tested when your story came out. We're hearing a lot of people decry the lack of testing available in the area. Has that dynamic started to change with Garfield County Public Health since your story?
Well, the latest we're hearing is that, you know, testing is still not readily available, and so they're pretty selective on who gets tested. I know Valley View Hospital just said today that only those who are hospitalized and in that high-risk category are being tested. And so that continues to be an issue.
Well, and one of the things that a lot of people have been asking me about, John, is the different ways that Pitkin and Eagle County have responded to the crisis from how Garfield has responded. For example, Pitkin and Eagle officials are getting in front of the citizens frequently. Just today at 2 o'clock, we were broadcasting live the latest weekly Pitkin County community meeting with different officials. Garfield commissioners seem to be staying mostly quiet, of course, approving some funds for different organizations like the important work that Lift Up is doing. Pitkin County has shut down construction and hotel bookings. In Carbondale, we're still seeing construction continue. And as you reported last week, some hotels and motels stayed open in Glenwood Springs. What's your perspective on kind of some of the differences based on what you've learned in your reporting?
Yeah, you know, that's been kind of difficult because we hear one thing from the state health department and then some, you know, different things from the local health departments on how they're adapting to, you know, the local situation. And that has been kind of a challenge because we do get a little bit of mixed messages here and there, and we kind of have to circle back and say, okay, what's the situation here? But, yeah, that it has been very much local county by county as far as how they've decided to get the information out, and Garfield County will send out press releases, but they haven't had that same you know, direct communication with the communities, it seems like some of the others have. And Carbondale, for its part, is really kind of ahead of the curve in organizing around the issue with the emergency task force and those sorts of things. So even within Garfield County, you're seeing a lot of that, handling it in different ways.
Yeah, and it seems like the number of the volume of people trying to help, trying to get involved in different ways, from Dave Reed's Facebook group to work that Katrina and others have done as volunteers, as well as the leadership we're seeing from Mayor Dan Richardson and the kind of coalition and, you said, task force that he's built, really across the spectrum, from city officials to nonprofit leaders and people from business experience. It definitely feels like a time where a lot of people are trying to come up with solutions. And like I said in my introduction, John, it seems like for you lately, a mix of sort of sad stories about kids missing out on things they've worked so hard for, at the same time that people are trying to put together resources and help each other. Are you feeling like the people trying to come up with solutions are helping to keep you going in terms of having to cover the tougher stories?
Well, yeah, and we're always looking for that that positive angle out there. How are people coping? And some of the good stories that are coming out of it. But it's fun to just hear how people are adjusting their lifestyles and doing their part to try to contain this thing.
Well, and just in the past 2 or 3 weeks, you've written, I think, 24 different stories in the PI. I want to shift into talking a little bit about the Roaring Fork School District. It's a tough time for everyone in the school system, from students and parents to teachers and administrators, of course. You spoke to Superintendent Rob Stein at the end of what should have been spring break, but really wasn't much of a break for educators. Can you talk about kind of the timeline and some of the goals that he expressed, and kind of what we're looking for, what families are looking at coming up here in the Roaring Fork School District?
Right, and I'm working on a follow-up story on that as we speak. But
scoop.
The governor said yesterday that schools will be closed through April 30th, and so that does mean that schools are having to move to an online format to deliver instruction, and it's fairly uniform within the district. We also have the charter schools that are kind of doing some similar things, but in their own way. I was over at the Ross Montessori School this afternoon taking pictures of school staff handing out Chromebooks to the students and parents that drove up to have them hand-delivered to them so that the kids can get ready to start learning from home.
Yeah, I live in view of the Carbondale Middle School, and I noticed a big long line of cars in the morning. I was curious what was going on there. I was doing my own childcare, so I couldn't get over there to find out. But I couldn't tell if that was meal distribution or computer distribution. Where did you see the Chromebooks getting handed out?
That was at Ross Montessori, and I believe they may also be doing that at the elementary schools in the district too, because the older students, a lot of them had their Chromebooks with them anyway when school was closed, but the younger students, not so much, because they don't let the younger kids take those home. They use them in school mostly, but that's probably what you're seeing there. And then they also do have the food distributions that are going on over at Crystal River Elementary School right now and Glenwood Elementary.
So, yeah, that's one of the ways that RFSD is continuing to serve right now, is by providing healthy meals twice daily to kids 18 or younger. And that's regardless of what school they attend or whether or not they qualify for free or reduced lunch. It seems like this is probably an important aspect for kids who are, without parental supervision during the day, who are allowed to walk and get that food, or else, even for just families trying to keep everybody fed right now.
Right. Yeah, so for us, it was just there's so many different angles out there right now. But the information comes at us so fast, and changes, and, the latest stroke of the governor's pen and all that. So it's been just a lot of playing catch up and reacting to this, that, and everything. There for the first couple of weeks, it seemed like we were getting 10 press releases between 5 and 6 o'clock in the evening on really important information that needed to get out there, and we're having to react to that. So it's been a difficult time, and at the same time, we've been looking for those personal stories that we can tell along the way that really, really tell the story.
I mean, I know, looking just at your byline in the PI, for example, how much you've been doing, how much you've had to cover just yourself, not let alone the rest of the staff. But it does seem like the news is moving faster than ever. I mean, one of the things in KDNK's member newsletters, the weekly email that we put out, is we always want to link to anything that happened here at KDNK, from local news to, arts and culture interviews. But also when we're doing NPR links, it seems like there are pages and pages and pages of headlines just every day. Another one I wanted to ask you about, last thing on the Roaring Fork School District, was you reported last week the district held its first ever video conference school board meeting. What does it mean that the superintendent now has emergency powers?
You know, there was a lot of questions around that and the way it came about, and it was a recommendation that actually came from the Colorado Association of School Boards that districts put this in place so that decisions could be made on some of these things that were needing to happen immediately without calling a special school board meeting every other day to make decisions. So they recommended that certain powers be given to administrators to, you know, put things in place, line up contracts for learning materials and food distribution and everything like that. And so it was a good conversation, and actually it was a great meeting. It was well organized, using Google Meets, I think was the format that they used. And it was, there was almost 160 people on the meeting at one point. So it was even better attended than an in-person school board meeting, to be honest.
Not easy to manage, and really important information that I'm sure parents who couldn't attend also were really keen to learn about. So again, John, congrats and thank you for making sure people knew, could read about that on the website or in print the next day. Another big important story that you just published this week is about the 9th District Chief Judge James Boyd putting all eviction actions and foreclosures on hold until at least June 1st. Have you ever seen that before in all your years covering the Valley?
I've not seen that. And I know, obviously the best reference point is the 2008 recession and the aftermath of that. Of course, that really, really impacted the housing market. And we saw a lot of foreclosures in the years following that, as well as evictions. So I don't recall that any sort of, the courthouse wasn't closed, and that's what's driving a lot of this right now, is the courthouse is closed, so they're having to change the way court proceedings are even happening.
Sure.
And prioritizing what has to happen. So, eviction proceedings. The judge basically, he was being asked to put a moratorium on eviction filings and compromised with, we'll continue to, take those filings, but we won't hear any of those cases until June 1st. So that's where it came down on that. But, there's groups out there that are obviously very concerned about that, and it's going to become an issue.
Well, and important that the Garfield County Sheriff you quoted him saying that he will also respect that that deadline of, not evicting people, but before June 1st, unless there's like an immediate health need or some other specific, exception to that. But also, you mentioned earlier the strong response from the town of Carbondale in the past couple of weeks. One of the things that was, I think a lot of people were pleased to see Mayor Dan Richardson say in his big latest press release, was that he was also calling for, some careful next steps around evictions and foreclosures. It sounded like Mayor Dan Richardson was encouraging landlords or people on the other side of the equation to reach out to their lenders and try to help to cover their situation, because of course there are many people who rely on a renter to get their own mortgage paid or for as income. So certainly, a lot of perspectives on that. But it seems like this is a pretty unique moment where you have the judge, the sheriff, the mayor, all sort of in the same direction. For folks who don't know, John, where exactly is the 9th district? When we talk about that, what's the line that we're talking about for this particular June 1st policy?
Yeah, the 9th Judicial District includes Garfield, Pickens, and Rio Blanco counties. So that would be the area that would be, impacted by that order.
Yeah, thanks so much for clearing that up, John. One last thing before we go. The PI has announced some big changes, including reducing the physical papers down to just Monday through Friday. And, personally, we had Jerry on the show, the publisher of the Post Independent, Jerry Rahal, just a couple of weeks ago. And Jerry's been writing some very reasoned and thoughtful pieces encouraging people not to panic, and really trying to help people think through kind of tactics to get through this and cope with so much grief that we're feeling, but also the PI itself needing to make some changes. I'm guessing that we probably don't have time to go into this stuff in too much depth, but people can read that from the PI's website. Isn't this also the first time in the time you've been with the paper that it has gone directly to readers asking for donations in the way that it is now?
Yeah, that's definitely a place we've not been before, where we're reaching out to readers and asking them to support local journalism. And, you know, we're used to that in the nonprofit realm, but it's a little different for us to be out there asking. But at the same time, you know, if you want the local news and want to support, you know, getting that information out there, then that's kind of where we are.
Well, I just want to make sure you know, John, that we at KD&K are rooting for you and everyone at the PI, the Soper Sun, Aspen Journalism, and all the other news media in peril in our valley right now. Keep up the great work. Thank you so much, John, and so glad every time that an important story breaks that we know we've got you on the case. So keep up the great work. Thanks, John.
Thank you too, Gavin and KD&K, because you guys are doing a bang-up job as well.
Appreciate you, John. Have a good one. Stay in touch. Or, well, stay in contact.
Will do.